not exist here, that a space-time is right flat if there exists two dimensions worth of covariant constant time spin. This is just the point that the introversion dimension for this equation delta I is precisely the vanishing of the introversion of the curvature. So that's the first characterization of the right hand space. That's the first fact. The second tool that we use is the concept of an alpha surface. Now, in the alpha plane you have mentioned, that is in the first of all, Roger mentioned that one can visualize crystals geometrically in space-time as being totally not two planes. And in fact, in the right flat space-time, these generalize to become alpha surfaces. These are defined as follows. Let's take a constant pi spinner. We're supposing that the space-time is right fast, this exists. Then an alpha surface is a complex two-surface whose tangent vectors are all of the form something times pi. Remember, the abstract index convention means that get the index made up of two spinnings, one time pi and one pi. And the fact would be that the vector is of this form, one spinner times another, that implies that the vector is null. So for example, if you have an alpha surface layer here, and two vectors u and v tangent to it, that means that u is equal to something times pi, say lambda times pi, v is equal to something else, say sine times pi. From that, one can see immediately that z is totally null. Both u and u are now electric, and in fact u is orthogonal to v, say u of v and v is zero, because this part is on that part, and that is zero. And this, the second point to notice is that this alpha surface is self-dual. You can take these two vectors, take two symmetrized tensor products of them, that leads to a bivector. That's how I'm going to try it. Times b with the x squared bracket derivatives u symmetrization. So this pi vector is self-dual. That's a dual of it equals I times itself. So these are two key ingredients that are going to this construction. You might have space time. Let's now say right away what the crystal construction is. On this slide here, we have some right hand space time. On the other side, we have a deformed crystal space, which I will note clearly see. What's happening here is that the flat crystal space is written previously, it's always written seen like that. That's demonstrated by some deformed crystal space. So the complex structure of that space is now different. And this deformed crystal space has to have this little bit of better structure on it, namely a map from the space, the crystal space from the space of pi spinners, and secondly, two body rays, one on the space of pi spinners and one on the whole crystal space. And one can give a definite procedure for how to get from this side to the other side and back again. If you say you begin with a space time, then you now want to construct a curved crystal space. And this is done as follows. The curved is moment, say Z pi A prime, the pi is a constant, that is an alpha. We have namely that the tangent vectors for this alpha surface have to form something time to time. Now, it isn't hard to convince yourself that the space itself does make up a four-dimensional complex manifold. And this, by definition, is this deformed crystal space. And this is place, well, now this extra structure, obviously one does have this nice, one of the nice places which you just project on this second term, yes, on the time. It is immediately obvious that it gives the volume forms the point that needs to be shown. Okay, that's how you give the space time not to build the physical space. Now, conversely, if someone gives you one of these co-physical spaces with a structure, you want to know how to reconstruct the space time with the metric on it. And this is done as follows. You just take your physical space as a bundle over the time space, and you just put the holomorphic sections of that bundle. And there's a theorem, and there again, that there will be a four complex parameter family of such holomorphic sections. And these, by definition, you take to be the points of your space time in N. And remember, with the complex space time, that means that it's a four dimensional complex manifold with a complex metric D. So that defines the space time from the first place. How do you find the metric? Well, the metric can now be defined in a natural way using this extra structure, 1 and 2. Now, this, in fact, points out how one can define the conformal metric. That's defined it this way. Here's your first space, T, which is a bundle over this time space. We now have to look for holomorphic sections of this thing. And I've drawn three of them here, x, y, and z. So there's just holomorphic sections of that. This bundle is together fine. These, by definition, correspond to points in the complex space line M, which are written down here, x, y, and z. Now the definition of the conformal metric of M. What the formal metric means is that you have a criterion for deciding where two points are null separated. That's what a conformal structure involves. And our definition is that two points x and y are null separated if and only if the corresponding holomorphic sections here intersect. That's the way they're formed. So this gives you a conformal metric on M. In other words, that gives you a metric GAU, which is uncertain up to some overall factor. So only there could be anything. No GAU, that is the 9 of the 10 components of this metric sensor. To find exactly what this conformal factor is, you have to use this extra structure. The whole point about this construction is that the metric is defined in such a way that it turns out automatically to be right flat. And the idea behind this, in fact, is to construct the metric in such a way that one has plenty of solutions of this equation, that one has plenty of time spinners with the covariant constant. It then follows immediately as a result of this theorem that the space time has to be right back. So one doesn't actually write down a metric to work on this curvature by differentiating them and so on. One just makes sure that one can find a whole lot of these constant spinners that then proves that the metric must be right back. Okay, well, what does this add up to? What this gives us is a procedure for finding this in general self-dual solution of Einstein vacuum equations. All we have to do is to write down some deformed crystal space. That's easy enough, as I'll show you in a moment. And then to go through this construction procedure, and that will give you a self-dual ramp solid solution of Einstein's equations. And once I hit with this, and that is finding these holomorphic sections. One knows that the sections exist, one needs to find them locally, but finding them globally That's the hard part. It's a very hard, implicit problem, and we haven't yet been able to develop the techniques for doing that. What we've done so far is to work out some special cases. But it is an open question that we be able to handle this in the most general case. Let me show you now some explicit examples of how this organizing works in practice. In fact, this is one general purpose book. And for our purposes, what is the most general purpose of space in this book? You just take two pieces of blank purpose space, say Q and Q hat, and you just glue them together on some overlap by means of some hatching function. So you have coordinates omega and pi on Q, omega hat, pi hat, on Q hat, and all you have to do is to patch these together on the overlap loop so that and in fact this is the most general patching relation which will preserve the structure which we have to preserve. We obviously have to have pi hat equal to pi, because we have to preserve map from T down on to pi. Right back, it's more time to imagine some of your solution of Einstein's equation. And it depends on this function g, which was a function of two variables, but it has homogeneity solution in it, so that made it effectively an arbitrary function of two complex variables. So, this is the kind of thing that one can do with this formalism. I've said nothing so far about the global structure of this thing. It's just a local metric. One obviously has to be interested in this global structure, and the hope is that one can also understand that using this incurved crystal space formalism. The other point, of course, is that this depends on our production of two variables. In general, self-distribution would depend on our function of three variables. But we still somewhere over can get to that. But it ought to be very helpful what we do. There was a rumor, in fact, earlier on that okay, let me move on now to talk about something that moves. I'd like to remind you of, I think, very briefly what that means. Okay, well, that's very briefly what animal's theory is. Now, here again, there are two sort of key points which enable one to deal with these subgroup animals in a historical fashion. One is, again, this idea of an alpha surface, well, in this case, very flat space. We're just dealing with alpha planes. That's a complex two plane, which is totally null, and which has the property that the sort of surface of I vector is self-dual. So, that gives a clue of how to deal with anti-self-dual, gauge between anti-self-dual, and Gould's fields. And that's based on the fact that an anti-self-dual core, FAB, is precisely one which is annihilated by a self-dual bivector. That anti-self-dual and self-dual things are orthogonal to one another. So F is anti-self-dual. If and only if F restricted to every alpha plane is equal to zero. That means you just look at F on that alpha plane, you don't just action on vectors which are tangent to the alpha plane. Now, F of course was the curvature of a connection. So what this means is just that the connection restricted to any alpha plane is integral. When the curvature vanishes, that just means integrability. And this then enables one to get from the vector bundle over space-time to a vector bundle over crystal space. This is the picture here. We have a region on this side. This region here is some region of complex and constant space-time. And corresponding to that, we have a region of projective crystal space. It's now factored. And the correspondence is that the alpha planes here, say, in space-time picture, they correspond to points in the projective crystal space picture. The animal's field, what that corresponds to in our geometrical way of looking at things, is a two-dimensional over the space-time and a connection on that vector. And furthermore, the anti-self-dual animal's equations just mean that connection is integral over each of these alpha-planes. If you just look at the vector one order, restricted to each of these alpha planes in turn, and we can look at the connection to the restriction, and that will be integral. This enables one to construct a whole orbit vector bundle in two-dimensional context for an orbit vector bundle over this region of crystal space. Let's call that vector bundle E. And in fact, it's hard to see. I mean, visualize how this, what this vector bundle consists of. I mean, over this alpha plane Z, you can just look at the vector bundle B just over that alpha plane. Now, the fact that the connection is integral, that means that one can find covariant and constant sections. One can find sections which are constant. Now, this vector bundle, we want to construct, that means over each point of the space, we want to construct a two-dimensional vector space. So this thing has to be a copy of C2. And that we define it just by saying that the points of this C2 correspond to these covariantly constant sections of the bundle B over this alpha plane Z. And that's how we get get from space time picture to the first picture. Conversely, given this explicit structure, one can reconstruct this bundle of people. That is difficult. This is called, in general, to be a trivial bundle of one just works globally. One works globally, it would just be characterized by some ontological integer or whatever. But the more importantly, we reconstruct the anti-self-dual connection on the spectrum. There's an interesting thing happening. In the space-time side of the picture, one had this vector bundle, but that had no information in it, apart from the type of image. It had no sort of analytic information in it. The information was contained in the connection. In other words, in the animal's potential A. And that's what one thinks of as the physical field with that thing A. That's not the bundle itself, that's the connection on the bundle. However, in the Swiss space picture, all one has is the bundle with no connection on it. And all the information is just contained in this sort of global complex structure of this bundle. And of course it has to be global. I mean every complex manifold globally is like every other complex manifold of the same dimension. So it has no information in it locally, but the point is that this region of Christmas space has some sort of global structure in it. It has an SQ going that way. Having the patterns in it enables it to store information in its global complex structure. And this is one example of that. All the information it gave you is just stored in the context structure of the vector bundle. Now, there are various ways of getting from here back to here. And there's some various procedures to try to drive down. As in the graviton case, none of these is completely explicit that one can write down the general sample solution of the angles and waves locally. Yes, so further formula. At least we haven't seen how to do that yet. So again, there, all we've been able to do so far is look at various special cases and try and find some of them in special solutions of these self-dual angles equations. In fact, it turns out quite remarkably that when we look at so-called instanton solutions, that such a simplification takes place, that one can do a lot with these things. Instantons, in fact, aren't just solutions, but actually of the SU2 theory, so it's like SL2C was an extra condition that these things have to be real. Might have pulled that in. And but most importantly, these things have to be globally defined and have some nice global problem. And what this implies in the first picture is simply that this next one will be has to be defined over the whole of the crystal space, dt, instead of just working over some subregion of the crystal space, you have to work over the whole thing, which is a complex projective free space. So, this game we're in is that of looking at homomorphic vector bundles of dimension 2 over complex projective free space. And it just so happens by some miracle that this is the kind of thing that algebraic geometers have been looking at in very recent years. They've been looking at exactly these kinds of bundles. And there's more than one way of constructing these bundles. And the sort of latest way, is based on the construction of Horrocks, involves manipulating matrices. And in fact, the whole problem just reduces to one of algebra. So it becomes a purely algebraic problem, a problem of finding these instruments. It still isn't an easy problem when you try to convert these huge matrices. That's sort of my part to do. But it is a purely algebraic problem, and if one wanted to find these increasing constitutions explicitly as sort of space-time fields, one could always do that. You can do a piece of computer. details of how this needs to be constructed work. I do want to say just a little bit to Edward about this question. I've told you about these sort of statements. I mean, these are more interesting from a physical point of view, certainly. In other words, one of my deal with school Einstein equations and school Young-Wolf equations, in other words, not the self-fueled ones. One of my deal with massive fields, and of course, one can extend this indefinitely to talk about interactions of various kinds. In fact, we already have some implied success with interactions. For example, if you want to talk about in zero resonance fields on a right flat background, one can easily deal with that problem using this implicit construction, which I mentioned first of all. But one just has to talk about implicit functions on this deformed implicit space, and that will give you zero resonance fields which are coupled to the right flat background in exactly the correct way. So it is promising that one is able to do that. But of course, that is all very limited. The question is, what about these things? Well, there are two possibilities, or three. I mean, one might be able to deal with these things using the same kind of formalism that I mentioned that you've seen previously. In other words, just a complex structure, that kind of thing. The second possibility is that might. That formalism might, in a sense, be essentially self-dual, and that to deal with these non-self-dual things, one would need some sort of radically new idea that would still have the same character, which still have the same kind of geometric character. And so, third possibility that one just can't deal with these cases is that kind of structure. But my feeling is, in fact, that one will be able to handle these cases using some kind of geometric construction, even if not the crystal one, and that's certainly worth looking for.
I don't know if people have formulated it like this, but the basic Tabuk one can be very simply stated. What you do is you look at the spin bundle of S4, and S4 obviously has a natural metric on it, which inherits, gives you a neutral spin connection. That spin connection is self-dual, basically because it's conformally flat. The Ricci scalar is just the curvature of the annulus field. And this has the peculiar property that it's both the right flat solution of the Einstein equations, except that the Ricci curvature is not zero, and is also a solution of the annulus equations. And it's manifestly rotationally correct.
Via asymptotic connection to crystal space. And picture that you have is that in an asymptotically flat space-time, which is therefore representing an isolated source of general relativity, the radiation field, which particle, is determined in both a deformed crystal space and an H-space, and that is providing some of the motivation for what is original coefficient space constructions. Okay, well, I'll begin by reviewing what happens with flat space and show how these constructions work, and then say how they carry over the view of the curved space. Since we want to talk about radiation, what we're interested in is referred to the null direction, or null infinity. And in flat space, null infinity is represented by two null packed surfaces. This is a picture. This is the picture you have of null infinity in Minkowski space. Minkowski space inside these two null half surfaces are null infinity. This one is called scribe plus due to null infinity. This one is scribe minus the plus null infinity. Each of these cross-sections this way are S2, and then it's just an R for the generators. It's convenient to introduce the stereographic order to label these generators. That's going to be theta. That's related to the usual total coordinates. This. And then, of course, we can see from this function. And then, as a course of generators, just take that parameter view. This picture of the sky. And then what I want to do is say how the Minkowski space in here is represented in terms of structures matching this null infinity, and how the crystal space in here can be represented in terms of structures at infinity. Okay.
Well, I'll start off with
the crystal space. I can't use Webber's color code from this morning. So a twister in here can be represented by a completely null 2 plane. This is going to be a beta plane, so it corresponds to that's this twister. This is a historic statement that's been perpetuated by the fact that beta twister don't want to change everything. So this is a beta plane, so now it's a
color.
Well, there is a fact that Jim is coming like this, but I don't know if he's red blue. This is Chris's completely on two pairs. So I want to talk about all these things being simplified. This is being complexified. And to you, it will become complex. As each and each bar have to regard as independent complex variables, which you can show by taking a bar and a then this twister in here is going to go out and meet scribe by counting out the scribe three-dimensional, the meet scribe line. And to visualize that line, it's very useful to do a picture of complexified scribe as more vivid in a way, a cube here. Running out this way, the sinking field border running along there, and the sinking border running up there. Then, when you run this field line two plane out to infinity, it meets infinity in a straight line. The straight line lies in the plane across the sinking field. So, let's make it a perfect straight line. If you remember, this twister breaks up into a pi part and a nonium part. Then the pi part, the ratio of the components of the pi spinner, is just a z tilde. So that the value of the pi part is given by which of the local z tilde planes you like. Then the omega part just tells you which geodesic of straight line this is. There are obviously a 2 gram of family in these geodesics called the wave star or direction going. And so the projective crystal space of these things is expressed as described in terms of these complex geodesics. You see the fiber picture which is referred to. Well, it's almost as though these utility planes are the fibers. The projection down to the fiber space is just a projection down to the utility space. So that's how you see the projected crystal space. What about the anti-living cluster space itself? If you take the point, then you can look at the null pair at this point. That will run out and meet infinity in a cross section. So, topologically spherical will meet every generator just once. But thinking of this from the real point, and this will carry over to the point as well. And so, as meeting scry in two surfaces, so that will be represented as a surface over here. Like this. So a point goes out to another, to a couple stripe, and that's represented as a particular surface over there. Well, which surfaces out there correspond to points? Well, that's the statement of if I take any old cross section up here, will it run back to a point? So there's a condition that it has to satisfy. So as opposed to just taking any old cross section, but that unique in terms of our back surface back inside, you want to ask what's the condition on that cut in order for that to come back to a point? Well, this is our back surface. As the generators have quite a signal associated with them, this is the shear of the generators, it represents the distortion as we go out. And this thing always has a form, it starts off with a 1 over r squared part, where r is the parameter of the generators, and that's a function of the other coordinates. And then higher order terms. The condition that this thing runs back to a point is simply the condition that this leading term vanishes. Because it can then follow necessarily the whole lot vanishes, and that makes it come back to a point. So the points in that cluster space can be recognized now that spry in terms of cuts, such that this quantity vanishes, because this quantity is called the asymptotic shear. So this is more things shear, this is the asymptotic shear. So you can now get the points of the Kostky space in terms of asymptotically shifted cuts out there. Now, what about the metric path? There's something I can say about that. Furthermore, these cuts have the property that they're ruled by these purple lines, which are the crystals. So if the space of purple lines, in other words, the asymptotic projective twist space, a point corresponds to one parameter family of them, and that's the particular crystal theory of a holomorphic curve in the twist space. In fact, it turns out for flat space that these things are ruled the other way as well by the alpha planes. The answer. But that's the topic. There you go. Thank you. There you go. Metric of the cluster space. We'll start off with the uniform metric. Suppose you've got 2 points that are now separated. How does that become independent here? Well, if the 2 points are now separated, then there's a twister that crosses through both of them. So let's think of these two points. So now this one, under infinity, like this. Both points lie on the same distance.